recorded earlier today.
Yeah, this started at Mount Tabor in 2006 when we found the document about the secret sale to Warner Pacific. Randy Leonard then authorized us to conduct free public record requests for a number of months, and we sure did a lot of
Now, Randy Leonard, was he water at that point?
He was Water Bureau. He was mad at Dan for trying to sell the property.
And Dan was what, Parks?
Okay. So then we had this big group meeting for 2 years to discuss the redevelopment of the yard and redo the master plan. And this document came up because of the discussion over the ownership in the parks.
Right. So both Parks and Water somehow co-own or own different parts of Mount Tabor. And what prompted your initial investigation was the selling of part of that to Warner Pacific?
Right. We started digging in, and then during those meetings, an engineer named Marianne Ellen Collentine, she's a senior Water Bureau engineer, started discussing the ownership issue with me and referred me to Dan, whom I then met at Water Bureau offices, and he gave me a bunch of documents and maps. Those I brought to our group, and we started discussing them. And it was determined that this issue needed clarification because they had not yet done so. Dan provided me with a bunch of maps and deed records, which I brought to the group, and that became then part of the master plan update.
And this also has implications for the reservoir work going on now at Mount Tabor.
It does. Sometime in the Potter administration, it seemed the city decided that they were going to call all of the city property indistinct under one legal entity. Contrary to what Dan's memo says, that there are distinct bureaus and you cannot commingle dissimilar bureau assets. That's also written in the city charter in a section under finance 6.11. These records are required to be kept by the auditor in perpetuity, yet they didn't seem to find a problem with the single ownership rather than separate ownership.
Right. This was under the Potter administration?
Yeah, it seemed to change then. Even though we discussed it in 2006, 7, and 8 during those meetings, there seemed to be a movement in the city to blur the distinction between singular ownership by bureaus such as a revenue bureau as opposed to a general fund bureau like Parks that needs approval from council to buy and sell property.
So what were the implications under the Potter administration of this merging or commingling of assets?
Well, I didn't really see anything specific at that time until the applications for the reservoirs came up in 2014. I then saw immediately that they were manipulating the process by excluding or precluding us from providing the information to BDS. So I then filed for a new use determination at Mount Tabor. This was due me in 51 days as a typical Type 3 application. And as of yet, I still don't have it 1 year later.
Right. So now the commingling of property, which we're saying it seems illegal, according to this memo from Water Bureau Dan Coombs. What are the implications of that when they try to make changes to the reservoir? I mean, you mentioned BDS, I think.
Well, BDS is supposed to vet all of the information and the veracity of what the Water Bureau as applicant has given them. Well, they didn't do it because I provided documents that showed, contrary to what Water Bureau supplied, what they proposed in the application wasn't correct. And they just ignored that because they couldn't achieve the outcome they wanted by acknowledging these documents. And I provided it to every bureau, OMF, the auditor. I mean, I went down the line and handed it to them. I sent it by email. I gave it to the city clerk for the record. Just ignored them.
So an issue is BDS has one set of rules if there's one property owner and another set of rules if there are two property owners.
Well, that's how the code is applied. First, you determine use, and then next, you look at the zoning and see what's allowed. Now, if there's one owner, it makes it much easier to accomplish what they wanted. If there are two owners, then it's a whole other pathway through the code to apply it. And with one owner, it also took away restrictions on properties that the prior seller incorporated into the deed when it transacted and gave it to the city.
if I hear what you're saying, for the city's purposes, whatever they are or will be, it's more convenient to treat Mount Tabor and, I guess, Washington Park as one parcel of land, whereas your best information is that that's not correct.
That isn't correct. There are 51 parcels in Mount Tabor and 44 in Washington Park. The Water Bureau owns 51 acres in Mount Tabor, and the Parks Bureau has the balance. It's 196 total. And in Washington Park, it's pretty much the same, almost a 50-50 split. And unfortunately for the applicant in this case, Reservoirs 3 and 4, which they own, sit on park parcels and not Water Bureau parcels. And I brought this fact forward, and they just ignored this.
Do you know anything about the original deeding of the property? Were there covenants or restrictions placed on it?
I only found one deed that would be problematic. It said, restricted to park use only with no construction allowed. However, when the applicant used the tax assessor maps and consolidated all of those individual parcels into one, that deed restriction no longer was relevant, even though it should have been vetted by BDS.
So we talked about the memo from Dan Coombs, who was a Water Bureau employee or consultant.
He was a Water Bureau employee.
And his opinion seems to be at that time, was that 2002?
It was in 2002 when they were considering how to permit the demolition of all of the reservoirs. So they hired a consultant to outline the problems, and I provided that link to both council and BDS. And in that link, it says that title and ownership are unclear and must be the very first step to define before permitting can go forward. It also said that reservoirs 3 and 4 were on park property and not water property. So these problems were identified long ago, and then Dan Coombs did his research and kind of clarified all of the legal issues and then provided that to hire legal to hire city staff.
Well, where is it now? Could you take this to LUBA?
LUBA is Oregon's Land Use Board of Appeals.
Well, I'm not as confident in LUBA's. Some people might be. I think the city has too much influence there. My belief is that, you know, if this goes to circuit court, then maybe it would be a pathway to invalidate both park applications.
And stop the work on the reservoirs.
And stop it, yeah. Because they haven't considered all of the legal documents and have done just as they want, not as they should have.
And the memo from Water Bureau employee Dan Coombs of 2002 lays out the issues, the legal issues in his mind. Is there any evidence that City Council itself or members of City Council also know this legal disparity?
Sure. I've brought it to them many times and sat down in face-to-face discussions with both Parks and Water Bureau commissioners, handed the documents to them, sent them by email, sent them to the clerk. Water Bureau actually handed them to me, so they know they exist, and they were also brought forward during the 2007 and 8 Mount Tabor meetings on the redevelopment. So they've had plenty of opportunity to see them. They just don't like them.
Is there a written opinion from any city council member or from city attorneys?
That written opinion is what I requested and what the city is now fighting. I think that will lay bare all of the issues that I believe will cause them to have to redo the applications.
The city council voted 4-1 to challenge the disclosure of the documents.
As I understand it, they did. And what I read is Mr. Novick was the one vote. And he said, rather than challenge it, let's just change the law.
So he's for continued privacy, these documents.
Sure.
And he'd just rather follow the law.
Well, I think he understands that the city will lose and it will cost them money, so they're throwing good after bad. And yesterday I talked to an Oregonian reporter who said he's going to piggyback on my request and also make that request. So now they will have it from two parties.
This may be slightly off topic. How do you understand Amanda Fritz's evolution on this topic? It seemed like early on she was saying that this is a boondoggle.
I don't know. I've known Amanda for a very long time, maybe close to 20 years. And I thought we were of the same mind at one point, but as she spent time at City Hall, things seemed to change a little. And I haven't had a conversation with her in a while, so I don't know her viewpoint, although I did know she was frustrated at some point being the single vote to always vote no, and maybe she found it she could better serve her constituency by not always voting her mind, but to go along sometimes. It doesn't make, you know, what she does right or wrong. It just seems to work for her.
It seems like, Mark, there is a solution. I mean, if Water Bureau simply compensates parks, don't all these problems just go away?
Well, they do have the right of eminent domain, and they can take land or buy land for completing or operating the water system. But they do have to compensate, and that's part of the opinion that Dan wrote about and in the documents I have requested.
Right. Well, if they're spending $500 million by paying CH2M Hill, can't they give a couple million to parks? I mean, why isn't that an easy solution?
I think there was a timing issue. They wanted to rush this through before the environmental rules changed on LT2. Once they start the work, you know how it works. They always say they can't go back, which is too late now, even though the rule might change. So we were anticipating that they would have a new reading on that law this year, and would hope that they would delay the work on the reservoirs until they had that new reading.
Right. Is there still time to save the reservoirs?
Well, I think that a stay or an injunction could be filed based on the obstruction and the use of incorrect information in the application.
And how will you move forward with the city's appeal?
Well, there's an attorney fee clause in there, so I'm hoping that we'll find someone who can help us help the DA to defend his position.
And what was that clause? The city has to pay your expenses?
They would have to if they lost, yes. So it's more good money after bad.
Well, anything else to tell our listeners? What do you see as a good way forward?
I don't, really. As you know, that we filed appeals on both land use cases with LUBA, and so those are still moving. But I would hope the city would just reconsider and withdraw the applications and let all of the information be known and base the application and the outcome on those applications on that information rather than just that they wish to share.
What stops City Hall from doing whatever the hell they want?
The only way I think change comes is to either embarrass them through the media or file a lawsuit. I mean, they do what they want, it seems, and the people don't have the funding or the wherewithal to challenge everything, even though they know it's wrong. So I don't really have a solution for that. I mean, I'm sure there's people trying to change that, but it's a really slow process. And by the time that happens, lots of problems can go by the way.
That was citizen activist Mark Bartlett. He is continuing to work for public disclosure of documents that city council members want to keep secret. Mr. Bartlett explained how it was more expedient for council to treat property at Mount Tabor and Washington Park as if under a single city ownership, and that this contrasts a simple reading of the law as well as the 2002 memo from Water Bureau employee Dan Coombs. At stake in the still sequestered documents referenced in the Coombs memo is the extent to which city council members knew that their ongoing destruction of our open reservoirs was illegal from the start. And this is Joe Meyer with KBOO News.
You're listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 5:57 p.m. Coming up next, Rose City Native Radio.
The KBOO Community Radio Artist in Residence program assists artists working creatively with sound. Every year, one artist or one collaborative group of artists will be awarded 20 hours of studio recording and production time with a KBOO mixologist in order to create a piece of sound art that will be publicly presented at the end of the residency. The goals of the KBOO Artist Support Program are to support and invest in individuals who are pushing themselves artistically using sound, whose work will impact the cultural landscape of Portland, and to bring those artists into the dynamic KBOO community of local, national, and international artists and activists. Applications for the 2016 KBOO Artist in Residence are due February 12th at 5 p.m. More information and application materials are at kboo.fm/AIR2016.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the 33rd Real Music Film Festival running from January 15th through February 8th. Real Music explores the lively interplay between sound and image, music and culture. Opening night, January 15th, will be Roxy the Movie, directed by Frank Zappa. Filmed over three nights in December 1973 at the Roxy Theater in Hollywood, Roxy the Movie encapsulates the qualities that made Frank Zappa a revolutionary musical pioneer. That's January 15th at 9:15 p.m. at the Northwest Film Center in the Witzel Auditorium at 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information on the films and more can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
You are listening to a digital indigenous radio show. All across Turtle Island, turn up your radios and decolonize. This is Rose City Native Radio.
Can you tell us Minden first then?
Hello out there, Indian country in Portland. How are you? Staying dry, staying warm? I know I'm trying to. We got a lot for you today. We have Trish Jordan. Trish Jordan is one of the founding members of Red Lodge. We'll be talking with her about the prison art show that is in town. So that'll be great. We have poetry, music, and more for you today. This lovely Thursday in January. It's been a rough week, though. You know, David Bowie's gone, and now Alan Rickman's gone. Cancer is a terrible, terrible thing, you guys.